Okay, this is Brief Remarks. So this is Brief Remarks, and we are out of the studio today, and we are in room 201S, right off the foyer of the House of Commons. Right outside here, the scrums are going on, the daily scrums. But we are here with Joëlle Lightbound, the MP for Louis Hébert.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. And Omar Al-Ghabra, the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Foreign Affairs for Consular Affairs, right?
Correct. All right. Good to be here, Susan.
Nice to have you. We're here today because we want this show to be about words matter. And all the talk we were hearing in the last difficult couple of weeks about the damage that words can do, about the importance of words in fixing things, too. And whether we're at a point in Canada's history where we're going to have to sort of reckon with this, where we're actually going to have to talk about making words matter. So I think the reason I thought of the two of you for this, and I'm going to ask Omar about this too, so because I think it was Omar, you first drew it to my attention. You said you were nearly weeping when you heard Joëlle speak in the House last week. And for those who missed it, Joëlle made quite an eloquent speech, which we will ask him about. But can you tell me what you heard Joëlle say and after the shootings in his riding and what you heard in the House that day?
First of all, I'm glad I sit just behind Joëlle, and I'm glad that when he stood up to make his statement, he blocked me in the camera. Otherwise, it would have... Everybody else would have been seeing, watching my tears roll down my cheek. You know, the way Joëlle expressed himself, and he had said something else earlier in the day as well in caucus. Put a human face to a lot of the talking points that many of us and other politicians have been saying.
Aujourd'hui, je veux aussi leur demander pardon. Pardon d'avoir observé ces dernières années leur ostracisation et leur stigmatisation. D'avoir vu prendre racine dans le cœur de mes semblables la peur, la méfiance et la haine. D'avoir fait de mon mieux pour y répondre, mais de ne pas en avoir fait assez. Parce que si les mots ont des conséquences, les silences aussi ont des conséquences. Plus jamais. Vous êtes à Sainte-Foy chez vous, vous le serez toujours. Assalamu alaikum.
We always hear words of solidarity and comfort after every tragedy, and they are needed and they are comforting. But the words of Joëlle called upon all of us to pause and reflect on what we've been doing up until then, and how responsible all of us are for the words that we say and the actions that we take, or the inaction.
That's right, yeah.
And it was a profound, touching call to action.
Had you ever heard anybody say anything like that before?
Never,
yeah,
never. And you know, I just want to say that this is not just about the type of prejudice that I think Muslims face. I think it applies to everything, because it's fair to say that there's prejudice across our society against other members of communities. You know, we're talking about today, this month, we're celebrating Black History Month. There are issues that the Black community is facing. We're dealing with reconciling with Indigenous people. There are things that are said in the past. So I think it's a call to action for all of us to pay attention to the words we say or the words that we don't say.
Maybe you should tell our listeners a bit about your own history in this. Like, you are an immigrant from Syria to Canada, and you've seen and heard a lot of this. So tell us sort of in brief your bio.
I'm I'm of Syrian parents. I was born in Saudi Arabia.
That's right, yeah.
Grew up between Saudi and Syria and came to Canada on my own when I was 19. Brought with me a lot of hope and excitement about the future, but equally anxiety and fear of the unknown. And I look back on these years and the experiences that I've had, and frankly, the welcoming and support that I received from Canada and Canadians, then the lessons I learned about my own identity and the people around me, made me a much more aware of the things that not only touch my lives, but touch the lives of my friends and my neighbors.
Joelle, so tell us a little bit about what went into the words that you first said in caucus, and then, and I know you've been called upon to talk about these a lot, but when you decided to stand up in caucus and then in the House of Commons and make Omar cry, what was going on? I'm sure you didn't intend to make him cry.
No, not at all. It's just what came to mind and heart in that specific circumstance. But I think if I look back at how I came to that specific speech at that moment is when I arrived back in Ottawa on Sunday night, I learned of the news at around 9:15. I just arrived at 9 o'clock, and immediately an hour after, I drove back to Quebec City to be with my people in this tragedy, and I was calling my friends whose families I know go to the mosque, and one of them, a good friend of mine, very young guy, smart, kind, brilliant, and he told me, and he was just calling around to see if his father had been at the mosque and was one of the victims. Finally, his father wasn't, but he said, "Joel, I know you've been there for the community, for us, you're a friend, and by no means do I hold you responsible, but the entire political class has let us down." And that really struck a chord with me, and I was like, wow, it resonated. And for the long 5-hour drive that I was doing and just thinking about this, and going through all sorts of emotions, a lot of anger, a lot of sadness, that sentence grew in me. And over the next couple of days, the next 48 hours, I should say, it got me thinking. And I remembered a saying that my mom's always told me: when you point a finger, there are still 3 fingers pointing at you. And I thought, instead of starting pointing fingers, look at what you've done. And I've tried the best of my capacity, I think, to undo a lot of the ignorance that has been spread for too long especially about our Muslim friends here in Canada, and in particular in Quebec City, and that at least that's where I've heard it, and got me thinking about what is it that I could have done. Have I been bold enough? And it made me realize that there is a need for all of us, I think, to be bolder in our defense of all cultural communities, but in particular, I think of our Muslims, our Muslim community here in Canada, which has suffered a lot of prejudices that have grown, I think, ever since 9/11, and have built up over years.
Can you think of a particular moment where, in retrospect now, you would have said something different?
The climate in my city is, I can think of times when I should have spoke up. When I went on the radio and I was given some very, huge generalizations, I'd speak up. But I think there are times when I'd hear things and I would just be disgusted, and I would let it go in a way. So I wouldn't take the time to maybe call them out or reach out and try to, I don't know. I think there are a lot of things that could have been done. And I'm not saying that this, like what happened on January the 29th, 2017 is one thing. And what went into the mind of that young man who was raised 4 kilometers away from where I grew up, and which also saddens me to see that someone who grew up so close,
right,
didn't maybe have the chance to have Muslim friends when he was a kid and be exposed and got into this rhetoric. And so what went into his mind, to me, that's almost irrelevant. Like, we have to look that before there was a problem. And so, yeah, it's...
What would you say now? If you were on a call-in show and somebody called in and said something gratuitously cruel or wrong about Muslims.
I think we have to expose the ignorance that's being spread. And every step of the way, and that's I think what will be my attitude going forward. When I was on these calls, I'd do it, but when I was not on these calls and I'd hear it, I wouldn't do anything.
Right,
and which led to sometimes you, yeah. So that's what I would do, I think.
Omar, what do you do? You're on the other end of this, and I know I've seen the stories. There's been some you're a target of this at
Me?
Times. Yeah.
I would have never known.
First of all, how hard is that?
Let me just first say that I refuse to let Joel accept responsibility for it. It's just touching to see him say that because it's a reminder for all of us.
Yeah.
For all of us to reflect on the things that we have done and that could do better. But I am confident that Joel had done everything he could to stand up to hate and prejudice. It is responsibility, the collective responsibility of society and politicians, media, pundits, even neighbors to pay attention to the words that we say and the action that we take. And I think the words of Joel was very important for all of us to serve as a reminder. I receive a lot of attacks, mostly on social media.
Mm-hmm, I've seen them, yeah.
And it used to bother me at the beginning. And then you come to terms with the fact that this is a small, a very, very small number of, frankly, cowards who hide behind fake names on social media that are vocal, that try to stir things, that try to poke reaction out of me or others. And I'm never going to give them the satisfaction of a response. In fact, I appreciate their presence because they give me more strength to realize that I have a role to play. And it's not just me. I mean, I happen to be an elected official, but there are thousands, hundreds of thousands, up to a million or others more who are fighting hate on a daily basis. They just don't get reported on or we don't hear about them.
I wonder if it's been, I grew up in a small town not too far from where your riding is in Mississauga, Omar, and I went back there a few years ago and heard anti-Muslim stuff from people I grew up with as well. And they had the same education as me. They grew up in the same place as me. And I didn't say anything either. You know, I politely turned away. And I wonder if that's a very Canadian thing. Is it the way we were brought up? I block people on Twitter when they talk that way. But is there something more we should be doing?
I think there's always something more we should be doing. I think what our government, what particularly our prime minister has been doing, sends a clear message.
Yeah.
That we are in this together. We reject any type of categorization or marginalization. We put to shame anybody who's trying to be vocal about their prejudice. But there's a fine line, right? I also want people not to feel that their right of freedom of speech is being denied. So there's a fine line between how do you convert somebody or how do you educate somebody or how do you just shut them down while they maybe say what they're saying in front of somebody else. I'd rather set an example for them. I'd rather show them their doctor who may be a Muslim, their pharmacist who may be a Muslim, their kids' teacher who may be a Muslim and looking after their families and remind them that how important that is for their lives, for our society, and maybe have them reflect on it and be ashamed or embarrassed by what they're saying rather than just shut them down. So it's I don't know, every context will require a different response, but yes, I think we could always do more.
What do you think, Joel?
Well, I and it's one thing that I told my caucus colleagues and that I was reflecting upon is I think the first thing is you can't change what you don't acknowledge. And though we like to think of ourselves, and I think we are a very tolerant society, and even tolerant, I don't like the word. It's like we're tolerating something. I think we're a welcoming society. We're very inclusive as a general rule, but we have these demons within our society. And we can't just turn away and try not to see what we don't like within ourselves. And for Muslims in particular, when I was thinking about what happened in Quebec City, it's obvious to me that 20 years ago, we didn't see Muslims. We saw our doctor, as you said. We saw our soccer coach. We saw our neighbor, our friend. They were from Algeria, Morocco, or elsewhere. But they weren't Muslims per se. They became Muslims through the lens of the prejudices, I think, that we have accepted and that we've been fed for way too long. And it's that we need to realize and collectively work to undo this web of ignorance that's been knit year after year after year, day after day.
I want to ask you how you do that, but have you noticed it as well, Omar, and that you've been here almost 30 years? Do you think, as Joel hasn't even been born 30 years, you're 29 today,
I'm 29,
by the way, happy
yes,
birthday.
Thank you so much.
Happy birthday. We wish them happy birthday in caucus today.
You're not supposed to be saying what happened in caucus.
Oh, I think I'm safe here.
I think that's safe.
Have you been noticing in your 30 years in Canada? Did you come? You came right to the Toronto area first, right?
Yes.
Have you noticed that too? That now Muslim has become something that it wasn't 20 years ago.
Yes, it's become much more pronounced. The ignorance. There was certainly always ignorance about a minority, which is not unusual.
But the type of
ignorance that exists today is totally different than the type of ignorance that existed 25, 30 years ago.
Was it 9/11? Is that the
9/11 started it? But I would argue that today is much more pervasive than it was after 9/11.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And how do you see that in Mississauga? Like, there are so many people of all kinds of cultures in Mississauga. It's hard to imagine it playing out there.
Look, on the one hand, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the overwhelming majority of people are extremely respectful and supportive and kind. On the other, I don't want to also ignore, like Joel said, we should acknowledge that it exists. Yeah. And I have seen it occasionally during campaigns, during town halls. And it manifests itself the same way it does, unfortunately, on social media. I can tell you, I allowed myself during the campaign to tell one person a day that I do not want your vote.
Really?
Yes. And usually I wouldn't say it happened once a day, but it happened. And it would be people who say it to my face. There are people, sometimes my volunteers come back and say, this person said that, but they wouldn't say it to my face. But there were people who would say it to my face. And I would say, I really feel bad for you. And, you know, we have a free country and I don't really need your vote. And I walk away.
How did that feel?
It actually felt good. And I could see that the other person maybe would feel bad about what they said. I don't know who they voted for at the end of the day. But there's a handful of examples that I had to deal with and my volunteers had to deal with. It's part of our challenge as political leaders, as elected officials, as community leaders, as I said, media pundits, to really expose it, but find a way to offer medicine instead of just torture it or condemn it. I mean, obviously we condemn it, but we can't just do that without offering some type of remedy.
Why do you think it is that people get away in politics with saying things they wouldn't be allowed to say in the normal workplace or in the schools or even in you said that in a shopping mall, you'd be kicked out. Why is politics still a place where people can say these things to each other?
Well, I'm not sure if politics is any different from I think there has been an moving away from the tragedy of the 29th, just looking at the climate before of Islamophobia and what contributed to it, I think we've seen a normalization of certain speech, which wouldn't have been normal in the past. And that's true in our private lives, that's true on social media, that's true in the media, and that's true of politicians as well. And I think we've had some politicians play that card and play in that movie, and because they felt like they stood to gain politically, I assume. But I think we have to be very, very careful because this is treading a dangerous path.
I wanted to talk to you about the imam's speech and what stood out for you in the when he spoke, because I think everybody will agree that that was also one of the... I also thought the Quebec premier had a lot of eloquent things to say last week.
He did.
He rose up to the occasion.
Yeah. Tell us what words kind of... what words mattered to you?
Well, there was one thing that the premier said which really, really moved me in the funerals in Quebec City, because when the coffins came in, we heard a lot of our Muslim friends there say, Allahu Akbar. And the premier said, we've heard a lot of what we've heard in the nice tonality of the Arab language, and we've heard Alhamdulillah, we've heard Assalamu Alaikum, but we've also heard Allahu Akbar, which has been portrayed as a prelude to violence in the media. But we've seen that it's been said when the coffins came in, because that's not what it means. It's not related to violence. It's not related to terrorism. The people who use that sentence, they make a perversion of their faith. And now we see a good example of what it really means. And I think that was very to the point of what has been going on poorly in the last few years.
What about you, Omar? What stood out for you among all those words that were spoken that, besides Joelle's?
What the premier did was also quite heartening when he accepted responsibility, shared the responsibility as well. And I think to Joelle's point, you know, when you want to point the finger at somebody, three fingers are pointing back at you. And I think that's a great way of setting an example for the rest of us to be self-examinatory, to look, reflect on our responsibility. So I thought that it was also a great sense of leadership, and you know, not going down the path of blaming others. There will be a time maybe when we can say you, person A or person B, stop saying that. But in the aftermath of the tragedy where we're trying to comfort the families of victims, I think we just need to bring down the rhetoric and be thoughtful and kind about our words.
And I, to that point, I think there is, and I've given it a lot of thought, and I think there is more to be gained from having each and everyone have a little examination of their own actions and inactions and words. And see how they can raise their consciousness to another level instead of starting attacking and put people on the defensive, and then we lose what has been, unfortunately, I think, this consciousness that's been gained through this tragedy.
I'm glad you raised the practical thing, and this is maybe a nice way to end the conversation. You're both in positions of authority. You both have positions within this government and within this parliament. Back in 1989, when a massacre took place in Montreal, that was a moment in Canadian history. It was a very sad one, but it also prompted, I think, some history-changing moves in Canada about violence against women and about violence with guns. Is this a similar moment in Canadian history? And you, in your positions here in government, what can you see? What constructive and practical things can we maybe take out of this? I know it's early days.
I'm still working to figure it out, and I'm thinking about it from sunrise to sundown, but it's still a little early.
What about you, Omar?
By the way, I had just arrived to Canada when that massacre happened in 1989. And tragedies are never, I don't want to call a tragedy helpful, but to honor the victims. We need to make sure that their loss is not in vain. So we need to, this was a call to action for all of us. And I know next week we will be debating in the House of Commons a motion by MP Ikra Khalid that calls on the Standing Committee of Heritage to study causes of Islamophobia and other forms of discrimination, and to come up with recommendation, and also calls on Statistics Canada to collect more information about sources and causes of hate crimes. So I think that would be one avenue. I think we each have responsibilities as well to go back and examine how we talk with each other and our neighbors and our families. And I think our leaders, including our prime minister, needs to maintain this course of sending a strong signal that stereotypes, prejudice, hate is rejected, and that we are in this together.
Can Canada be better after this, Joel?
I'm convinced that it will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I think we'll grow out of this tragedy.
Thank you very much. I know it hasn't been easy to talk about this, and I really do appreciate both of you. I recognize it's a very emotional topic for both of you, but I got a lot out of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. You.
So if that conversation made you think or made you feel or maybe did a little bit of both, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us via Twitter at Canada 2020 or email us at briefremarks@canada2020.ca, or you can talk to me too. I'm on Twitter as well. Don't forget to rate or review us. It really helps other people to find us when you do. Thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.